Good morning. Deja vu, hey? Here I am again. Well, I don't know how many of you are here three weeks ago, last time I was preaching. I went back and it was 52 minutes. I didn't realize that some of you were probably like fainting back there. I was caught up in the moment. I'm not sure. So as I was preparing this week, I kind of thought I had everything together. And then I start going over this again yesterday and I realized I'm going to have these guys here for an hour and a half. I don't know how they're going to feel about that. So we won't be here for an hour and a half, I hope. I ended up kind of breaking things apart and want to do kind of part of it this week and part of it next week. So we'll only be here for about 45 more minutes. Is that all right?
Yes.
Just kidding, I hope. gotta get this going here. I guess the theme I started with last time was living in the light of another reality and looking at 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16 and 18. And I think Paul in this passage captured what this meant, to live in the light of another reality. And of course, we're talking about, you know, our internal reality, our destination, beyond this life, beyond this physical life, and spending eternity with God. And what does it mean to live in light of that? And if you remember, if you were here, we talked a little bit about Columbus, his voyage in 1492 when he sailed the ocean blue. And he, at that time, Spain's motto, one of their mottos was, no more beyond. Do you remember what the Latin was, anyone? Okay, no worries. I wouldn't have either. Non plus ultra means no more beyond. That was their motto. They were at the end of the Europe there, kind of the furthest east that you could go. There was nothing beyond there. There was water. And Columbus, of course, he sailed out to try and find a passageway out to Eastern Asia. And along the way, he found a whole new world that no one had any idea existed. And so he kind of flew in face of this motto, no more beyond, and he proved that there was something more beyond. But the question we asked was, are we living our lives by that motto, no more beyond, non plus ultra? Is that our motto we live by? Are we living this life as this is all there is? I'm going to enjoy it the best I can, or I'm going to suffer through it, but this is it. You know, once I'm done here, that's it. And of course, as Christians, we know there's something beyond. We know there's something beyond this life. But the question is, do we live as if there is something beyond? Are we caught up in the moment? Are we caught up in this world? And this world has a way of just pulling us in and sucking us in. And we are, you know, we are part of this. We can't deny that we are physical beings. We have to pay our taxes. We have to buy groceries. We have to prepare meals. We have to do all these things to survive. It's part of who we are. But there's a sense where this world just pulls us in to the point where it takes all our focus and everything. And just going to ask a couple of questions here. And I know you know the answer to these things, but just think about these things. Think about this. No matter how much exercise you do, no matter how much you sculpt your body into this mean athletic machine, one day your body is going to kick the bucket. It's going to keel over and die. It doesn't matter. You can run 15 marathons a year or whatever. One day, you're going to kick the bucket. All right? Think about your house. No matter how big or strong or secure you build your house, one day it's going to burn up, it's going to fall over, it's going to collapse. It's a guarantee. It may be tomorrow, we hope not, or maybe in 10 years, or maybe 100 years. It's going to happen. How about your business? No matter how much time you spend on your business and you invest in it, no matter how much you grow it, one day it's going to close its doors. Maybe it won't happen in your life. Maybe it'll happen, you know, in a few generations as you, you know, hand this thing down. But one day, it's going to close its doors. Or what about your stock portfolio? No matter how much time or money you invest in this thing and how big you grow it, one day, it is going to be worth zero. And we could come up with whole different things. You could fill in the blank here. No matter how much you invest in so-and-so, one day, it's going to be nothing. But that doesn't keep us from investing in these things, and it's not that these things are bad. You know, we need a place to live, and it's good to exercise because otherwise, I don't know, we have trouble getting off the couch because we're so unhealthy or whatever. You know, these are good things. But if you think about those things taken away, you know, one day that's all coming to nothing. How does that make you feel? Does that make you feel despair, discouraged, disheartened? Or does it make you excited to think, you know what? Yeah, whatever, those things are passing away. There is something much better coming. If you honestly ask those questions yourself, how would you respond? And I think Paul has this sense of such an optimism, despite some really tough situations. And I think we can learn something from that. Last time, you remember, we talked about reflecting God's glory. And living in the light of another reality meant beholding God. It meant realizing that this world, our bodies are decaying, this life is kind of slowly wilting away, kind of like our flowers do in summer here, or almost any plant. But it's okay, because there's something else at work within us. And I'll just read that first verse there. It says, "Therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day." And we focused on this inward renewal, and as we look to God, that this transformation takes place and something wells up inside us, something changes within us. And this is a process that we're on, that we're just in this continual renewal process as we behold God and as we look towards Him. And there's great joy in that, despite the decay in our bodies, in our lives, in the world around us. There's a reason for hope in that. The next verse is the verse I kind of want to focus on today, and it says, "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." Whew, that's a kind of a loaded verse. And then he ends up that passage, "So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." Fixing our eyes on what is unseen. There's a couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to house sit in an oceanside house. It was out kind of in the area where Truck Dryling lives, in that area there. And it was kind of neat. I really enjoyed it. This was two or three months ago when it was still cooler. The nights kind of cooled off, and so I could open up the patio doors of my bedroom and I could fall asleep to the sound of waves, and I could get up and I could pull out my Bible and have some devotions in the backyard there and just watch the water and hear the waves. I don't know, some of you probably have that privilege every day, and I really enjoyed it for a couple of months. And one of those mornings, as I was sitting there, I was feeling a little discouraged by some of the things that were happening. It just felt like I was just wondering, you know, where is God in some of these things? And I was just feeling kind of discouraged about it all. And as I was looking out on the ocean, I didn't see anything. You know, there was no like some dolphin jumping up or anything like that at that point. But I just kind of got this picture of the ocean is this whole world that we don't see what's going on beneath the surface. The surface is kind of hides everything that's going on beneath the surface. But in reality, there is a whole lot going on there. You know, if you could take the water out and if you could walk around or drive around the ocean floor, you know, as we do here, you know, on land and see everything, I think we'd be amazed. I think that's why Miguel is a marine biologist, and he's actually out this morning on a boat doing some research, and I think he loves the ocean. He loves studying it and seeing what's in there. And if you think about it, the Earth, the globe, the surface, the difference between what percentage is water and what percentage is land. Anyone have an idea what percentage the difference is? Any guesses? Yeah, I found 70-30. 70% water, 30% land. That's a lot. That's a lot of surface. The more of this the Earth we live in is covered with water than it is with land. Did you know that Everest, the highest point of Everest, anyone have any idea, remember, how many feet Everest is? About 29,000 feet. You know what the lowest ocean depth is? Any guesses? It's It is, I don't know how many it is in miles, but I found here the deepest place they found is 36,000 feet. So the ocean is actually deeper. It goes deeper than the land that we see. So there's a sense this whole world of the ocean hidden from our eyes. It's there. It exists. But we kind of, I don't know. I grew up on the prairies. I grew up in outside of a small town called Winkler, Manitoba, right about 2 miles from the border of the United States. And I actually grew up, I checked this out, I grew up 110 miles from the geographical center of North America. Basically, you can't get further away from the ocean than from where I grew up. So the ocean for me was a foreign concept. You know, I knew creeks and, you know, we'd go to the lake sometimes. And, you know, lakes have their own mysteries to them. You tend not to be able to see further than 2 feet down because lakes tend to be kind of, yeah. But anyways, so the ocean is kind of a foreign concept, and I think Kyler could probably attest to this, that I wasn't built for the ocean. A couple of weeks ago, we went out fishing, and the waves were about this high, and our boat was about half the size, it seemed, and I did take something for my stomach, but I was pretty quiet most of the trip, just kind of focusing on the shore, trying to keep the breakfast in check. And so I'm not one who is, you know, I like the land. I prefer to stay on the land. And I know I might be speaking to the wrong crowd here, because here in San Carlos, you know, the major things, fishing and sailing and scuba diving, all things that take you into the ocean and all things that I can enjoy the swim once in a while. But back to this illustration, though. I wonder if we often live like that, though. Like myself as a prairie boy, a land dweller. You know, we're content living in this on the land here, and we just pay no attention to what's going out there. We might go for the occasional swim, the occasional dip, but we're land dwellers. We're physical people, and we get caught up in this life of what we can see. Paul says here, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. And he's encouraging us: get in a boat, put on a wetsuit, get in there. Let's take a look. Let's take into account this whole world that's out there. Let's take into account this other reality. You guys with me?
Yes. Yeah.
And so I called the message Living with an Eternal Perspective. And I think this is what Paul's getting at in this verse in 4 verse 17. He says, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So let's take a look at this verse a bit, and I want to pull it apart and kind of see what it has for us. And Paul is kind of taking some contrasts, some opposites, but not just opposites. He's taking us through some extreme opposites. And the first one, we'll take the first opposite and pull this apart, and he says, trouble and glory. If you look at the verse again, for light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory. Let's take a look at that, trouble and glory. Troubles, he's using the word troubles to describe what? Our present, this life that we're in right now. Maybe, I don't know if that's exactly the way we want our life to be described. You know what? This life is going to be full of troubles. I don't know if you're getting on a flight. I don't know if any of you ever get scared on flights. I always do. I always kind of have to just, okay, am I ready? Am I ready to meet my Lord? Am I ready? These thoughts always go through my minds. And, you know, the pilot will usually come up, you know, before takeoff or maybe just after you've taken off, and he'll just be all friendly and nice and be all cheerful and talk about the beautiful weather, where we're going to, and the skies are beautiful. And once in a while he might say, yeah, there might be a little turbulence, so-and-so, and, but it's going to be okay. You know, he's really positive, right? Now, what if he came on at some point and he said, well, you know what? The right wing engine is actually falling off, so we're going to have to make a quick descent here. Or, you know, you could fill in the blank there. There's a lot of things a pilot could say that would probably freak you out, right? And we don't want to hear there's going to be troubles, there's going to be issues. We want to think this is going to be nice and easy. But Jesus confirms this. He confirms this. He tells us in John 16, verse 33, in this world you will have trouble. man, that's not what you want to hear from the guy who's in control, is it? We're going to have a rough flight here. This is not going to be easy. Man, not words we want to hear. But nonetheless, there we got it. Trouble. This life, trouble. Glory, the other side of the equation, is the word glory. And Paul's using this to describe the future. This is what's coming to us. And glory is kind of a huge word. And I found this quote. It's kind of wordy, but I think it helps unfold this huge concept of what glory is. It says, "The glorious condition of blessedness into which it is appointed and promised that true Christians shall enter." When? After their Savior's return from heaven. The glorious condition of blessedness. Doesn't that sound wonderful? It's hard to maybe understand or get a concept of what that is. But Paul's saying there is something glorious and wonderful and blessed and amazing that's coming. It's not here yet, but it's coming. This is a part of the future of what we have to look forward to. When I think about heaven and what it's going to be like, I often think of the verse in Revelation 21, verse 4. And it says, "There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." It's almost as if it's more easy to relate to glory by understanding what's not going to be there. You know, what we're experiencing now that isn't going to be there. And that list is a very real list, isn't it? I think we can all relate to every one of those words. Death and mourning and crying and pain. And those things will be gone. And that's a beautiful promise, isn't it? But that promise isn't for here and now, is it? That promise is for later on. That's for the sequel. And I know that we know this as Christians, but I think we sometimes forget about this, and we want to live in that glory now. We want to experience that now. We want to experience that life without death and mourning and crying and pain, and we come to God and we think, "God, fix this. Would you take this away? I don't want to be experiencing this. I don't want to be going through this." Amen, or am I alone? And, you know, I think that the whole health and wealth gospel kind of gets us out of focus sometimes. And I want to be careful, because I know that God can show up and He does do amazing things. And He does, you know, at times He reverses this order. He brings people back to life. He heals diseases and He does these things. And He shows Himself in a powerful way. But He doesn't always do that, because we're not there yet. We're not in that place yet. And I don't think, yeah, we're still kind of in this process, this pathway. We're not there yet. So we've got these two words, trouble describing our present and glory describing our future. Then he goes on, he kind of describes, what is trouble like? What is glory like? And Paul has this picture of weight, of weighing things, of comparing things by their weight. One, he calls our troubles light. I don't know what you think about that, but I kind of think, Paul, what do you think? What are you saying? Who's calling my trials, my troubles light? Who do you think you are? You haven't been through what I've been through. You're not going through what I'm facing right now. You haven't seen my past and all these things that I've gone through. Do you feel that way? Light troubles? Who's talking about light troubles? My troubles are not light. And we can get caught up in this, but of course we know that Paul did not live an easy life full of what we would call light troubles, did he? It was quite the opposite. And earlier in the book, in 2 Corinthians, he says, "We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death." That sounds pretty heavy, doesn't it? And elsewhere in the book, you know, he talks about some of the trials he's gone through. I don't know, you know, not sure exactly what trials he's talking about in this particular passage, but elsewhere he says, you know, how he's been flogged, how he'd received the 39 lashes, how he'd been beaten with rods, how he'd been stoned, how he'd been shipwrecked 3 times. Well, maybe some of the things I've gone through don't seem quite so heavy, but maybe they still do. But the reality is that in some sense, Paul, well, he definitely knew what he was talking about. He had the credentials to talk about this. It wasn't like he lived an easy life. Oh, yes, this life is easy. My troubles are light. Praise God. I'm going to heaven. He had some real history, some things he had dealt with in his life, and he was still able to come to this conclusion. So we've got our troubles that are light. And now we're looking at the word glory. And glory outweighs the troubles that he's facing. So just maybe just pull out your scale. And I'm not talking about your bathroom scale, but one of these scales, which probably none of us have, but we've seen in pictures, you know, these balance scales, where you can put something on one side and you put something else on the other side, and you can weigh them out and see if they're the same, see which is heavy. If you want to just, in your mind, pull out that scale. And we're going to run a couple of experiments on that. And we often think about the cost of something, you know. If we want to invest in something, if we want to buy something, okay, let's pull out our scale. On one side, we're going to put the amount of money this is going to cost. The other side, we're going to put this item. Are they about balanced? Do they equal? Is it worth the cost? You know, we're hoping that if anything, what we're receiving is going to be a little better than what we're putting into it, right? Or at least we're hoping that it's going to be balanced. We don't want to put more money into something than it's worth, right? You following me? All right. So we got our balance here. You know, we can think about an investment. You know, you want to put money away and you want to receive something extra for it. You don't want to just receive the same amount. You sure don't want to receive less, although sometimes that seems to what happens when you put money in banks, right? You seem to get less back. But we're talking about an investment. You know, you want to, well, right now the interest rates aren't too great, so maybe we'll get a 2%, 3% interest rate. Maybe we'll get a 5% return. Maybe if we're really lucky and we'll take some risks and some risky investments, maybe we'll get 10% or more on our investment. But we want to see this other side outweigh, you know? We want to see the other side outweigh what we're putting into it. And Paul is getting to this idea that we can throw our troubles on one side, and in comparison to what is coming later on, there is no comparison. This is not like this balance is going to slightly weigh to the other side so that, yeah, you know, the eternal will give us a 5% return on what we're getting. He's saying there is no comparison, that what is going on the other side of this balance completely outweighs what we're experiencing now. And just hang with me here with your scales. Don't put it on the shelf yet. Let's just think about this idea of light troubles, and just take a backpack. Take one of these big backpacks, you know, these big hiker's backpacks with a frame on the inside that you can put a lot of stuff in. And then go out and find a pile of rocks. And for everything that you're carrying right now, if you care, every trial, everything that you're carrying now, and just take a rock and put it in that bag. And then go back into your past and think about all the big things you've gone through. And for the bigger things, take a bigger rock. For the smaller things, take a smaller rock and just fill your backpack. And you'll probably fill your backpack if you do this too long enough. We don't want to stay here, so don't. If you fill your backpacks, just stop there. We'll forget about the other stuff. Now he's saying, take off this backpack. Let's throw it on the scale. Okay, got our backpack on the scale. It's definitely down at the bottom. Now, in comparison, we're going to take what's coming in eternity, and we're going to take Tedekawi. We're going to take the mountain of Tedekawi and throw it on the other side. If you don't know what Tedekawi is, it's that big two-peaked mountain that kind of is iconic in San Carlos here. Take that mountain. You're doing this in your imagination so you can do it. Take it and throw it on the other side of that scale. That's the comparison we're talking about. You know what? No, take Tedekawi off. Let's take the whole Sierra Madre mountain range and put it on there. And let's see how it balances, how it weighs out. And so on one side, you've got something that is very real and heavy, our troubles, you know, this backpack full of rocks that we carry around something, and they're very real. And it's not to say that these, no, they're not really that big. Yeah, they are big. But you know what? The other side, on the other side of the scale, is something that is so much incredibly bigger that in comparison, it makes these things that we're going through now almost trivial. You know, if you hold up a pile of rocks compared to the whole Sierra Madres, there is no comparison. There is no comparison, is there? And I think that's kind of what Paul's trying to get at here. Going back to this verse, all the way back. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. And there's one more. Sorry, I lost my place here. There's one more comparison he makes. And momentary versus eternal. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. This is another just extreme perspective or extreme comparison. And in the moment of the things that we're going through, we often don't think of momentary. You know, in the moment of something really difficult, it doesn't feel very momentary. And I'm sure Paul had these experiences too. Later on in 2 Corinthians, he talks about the things he's gone through. He talks about how he's been shipwrecked 3 times. And one of those times, he was out in water for a day and a night and a day. I can't imagine. I get tired after swimming, you know, out there for 15, 20 minutes. Imagine that. I'm sure that wasn't a momentary trouble going through his mind. I'm sure that was a very real problem, a very real issue that he was dealing with. But in light of eternity, it's momentary. And, you know, the Psalms talks about, I think there's many verses that talk about how our lives are but a breath. Psalm 39 verse 5 says, "You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Everyone is but a breath, even those who seem secure." Everyone is but a breath. Think about that. I don't know if you guys like useless facts, but think of how many times you breathe in a day. And they say, on average, a person will breathe 12 to 16 times a minute. And so, in a day, if you'd multiply that out, that's 20,000, over 20,000 breaths in a day. If you multiply that, let's say 80 years, we live a full life of 80 years, we're talking over 588 million breaths we breathe. And that's only if you're a couch potato. If you're sitting on the couch and you're not out there running marathons and getting your heart going, then you're, who knows how many breaths you've breathed. But our life is but one breath, one out of 588 million. That's how our life is, how long our life is in relation to eternity. I want to just take one more illustration. And when I found this, I was kind of blown away by this. And maybe this is how we feel sometimes. You've ever heard of the saying, carrying the weight of the world on one's shoulders? And maybe you felt like this guy before, and maybe the world really should be depicted a little bit bigger than that, but we feel these burdens weighing us down. Now let's think about the size of the earth. And I found these pictures, and there's 8 of them, and it shows us the perspective of earth as it relates to the rest of the universe. So we've got the earth here, all right? Our next slide here. I know you can't read what it says there, but I don't know if you can see there's a little red thing. It's kind of hard to see. But right at the center, nonetheless, is the sun, and just beside it is the earth. We're looking at our solar system. This is a picture of all the planets within our solar system. And I know you can't see it very well, but you'll kind of get the sense of this as we go. So here's our solar system. This is a picture of the solar interstellar neighborhood. If any of you are astronomers, you'll know what I'm saying. I'm not really sure what this language is, but it's talking about the neighborhood of the solar systems kind of around us, our solar system, including the sun and our planets. This is the local neighborhood. This is like going around the block and, you know, seeing the other houses on the street or the other streets in your neighborhood. This is our neighborhood of solar systems. Now we're going to zoom out a little more, and then right in the middle there, you can see that little bit of red, and that's pointing out our solar system. Now we're looking at the Milky Way galaxy, and you see that red there, it's pointing out exactly where our neighborhood, our solar interstellar solar system neighborhood, is hanging out within the Milky Way galaxy. Okay? Are you with me? Now we're zooming out even more. Now we're looking at the local galactic group. This is like the neighborhood of galaxies. So we're buried deep within that Milky Way galaxy, and these are the galaxies that are kind of surrounding our galaxy. This is the local block of galaxies. We're going to zoom out some more. This is the Virgo supercluster. These are the local neighborhood galaxies hanging out together, and we're buried somewhere deep within that galaxy. All right, we're zooming out some more. The local superclusters, all these little superclusters where all these neighborhoods of galaxies are hanging out. Is your head hurting yet? We're zooming out some more. Here we go. This is the final one. This is the observable universe. And you realize this is only the observable universe. Like, you know, it's not like man has pulled out the telescopes and we've realized, oh, there's a wall there. This is the universe. No, this is as far as we've been able to see, apparently. I've never personally seen it, but I'm trusting by what they're telling us. This is the observable universe. That gives you a very big different picture of what Earth looks like and how big it is, doesn't it? And Earth is like, you'd have to use a lot of 0.00 and a ton of zeros there, 0.1%, you know, there'd be a lot of zeros there to come up with an idea of how big the Earth is and compare it to the observable universe. And this is, I think, what Paul is just getting at. He's getting at this idea, there is something so much greater in eternity, so much greater, that in comparison to what we face here on this earth, it is almost as if it's nothing. There's a few different versions I want to look at this verse. It says, "For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." There's another one. I kind of like this one. "Our temporary minor problems are producing an eternal stockpile of glory for us that is beyond all comparison." There's one more. This is from the Message. He says, "These hard times are small potatoes compared to the coming good times, the lavish celebration prepared for us." It's pretty exciting, isn't it? It's pretty neat to try and put these things into perspective. And I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. But I think what Paul's getting at here is that there's something so amazing coming that whatever we go through now, as the Message put it, is small potatoes in comparison. That God is bigger than anything I will ever face. And this doesn't minimize what we're going through, but what it does is it turns our focus on God, and we see God as huge. We see the eternity that's coming, that He's preparing for us, as huge. And Paul lives, I think, with a huge sense of who God is, a huge sense of this eternity, and more importantly, a huge sense of who God is. And not only that, but he lives with an excitement for the things to come. And there's so many verses that I talk about this. And Philippians 1, verse 21 or verse 23 is kind of like that, and says, Paul is writing here, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. For if I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is by far better." It's not only about getting out of the pain and the suffering. It's about being with Christ. That's the thing that Paul was so passionate about. And growing up, I kind of struggled with this. You know, growing up, you have a lot of dreams and desires, things I want to do in this life. You know, before I go to heaven, I want to do this and do this. And, you know, as time passes, maybe as we fulfill some of those dreams, and maybe, you know, we've been there, we've done that, we've checked it off the bucket list, or maybe we've been disappointed by these things, they haven't been as good, or maybe we've just plain been disappointed by life, you know? This life isn't all that it's cracked up to be. But we start to get this perspective, you know what, there's got to be something more. And there's got to be something beyond this life. And within our hearts, I think we crave this, and we start to recognize this craving, that this life can't give what our hearts truly desire. I just want to go to the story. I just want to kind of wrap up with a story of Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus, who was sick. And you guys will probably remember the story. And I always remember Mary and Martha whenever I think about them. I think of Mary, who sat at the feet of Jesus, and Martha, who was out busy in the kitchen, right? And Mary kind of scored some brownie points there and doing the better thing, right? And this story is actually the opposite. In this story, it's Martha who kind of scores the brownie points, and Mary who maybe could have had a different, better response or reaction. So we'll just kind of set up the story. Lazarus has become very sick, and his sisters, Mary and Martha, they send word to Jesus, and they tell him, "Lord, the one you love is sick." This is in John 11, if you want to read this later on. And Jesus, we know kind of how the story goes, Jesus waits, he purposefully waits 2 extra days. And then at the point where he decides to go back, he tells the disciples, you know what, Lazarus has actually died already. But he purposefully waits, knowing that Lazarus would die. He doesn't go as soon as they've called. And as he's coming back, it's Mary. Mary meets him. Actually, Martha meets him first, but I'm going to skip to Mary's response first. And what is Mary's response? And it's this one right here. It says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Talk about a loaded statement. Lord, if you had been here. There is blame here. There is deep despair. There is deep disappointment. Jesus, we called. You didn't come. If you had been here, Lazarus could have been saved. Now he's dead. And you can get the sense of there's just hopelessness and despair in her voice. And we'll fast forward, actually we'll go back, and we'll look at what Martha's response is. And I'll just go to one other verse here. Mary wasn't the only one who felt this way. Other people said as well. In John 11, verse 37, he says, other people were saying, could not he who opened the eyes of a blind man have kept this man from dying? Other people recognized, well, they sent for him, he didn't come. Couldn't he have done it? What's the deal? Could he have not? They recognized, Jesus has power and ability here. But he kind of dropped the ball on this one. You know, he could have healed him, but he didn't. Now it's too late. Now the situation is kind of hopeless. Now we're going to go back and look at Martha's response. And her response, her words are very similar. She starts off the same way, and she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And so she's in the same place of grief, and maybe, you know, there's some disappointment, and there's burden and there's pain here too. But then she goes on and she says, "But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask." And perhaps in the back of the mind, maybe she was thinking, "Jesus, you can still come in and you can save his life and you can raise him from the dead." We don't know exactly what she was thinking, but we can be sure that she still had some level of hope. There was some spark of hope within her. She hadn't thrown up her hands and given up. "But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask." And we know how the story ends, that Jesus comes and he raises Lazarus from the dead and he blows away their expectations and he shows himself as the all-powerful God. And, you know, we know the end of the story. We know how this ends. And so for us, it's maybe not as heart-wrenching to go through the story because we know the good is ending. We know it's going to end in a happy ending. And, you know, I think about lots of movies. You know, how many movies we watch these days end up in happy endings, you know, and some of them are really painful to watch, the situations they go through. But we know, okay, it's going to end in a good ending, right? And sometimes we wonder, how could this possibly work out? But they do it. These Hollywood writers are geniuses, aren't they? They can solve any problem. And I don't know if you've ever watched a movie that doesn't end in a happy ending and you wonder, why did I watch that movie? That was a waste of time. Yeah. Fortunately, a lot of the movies don't end that way. They end with good endings, right? And we can hang in there because we know the story is going to be a good ending. We know it's going to end well. We hope so anyways. 99% of the time they do. But I think this is what Paul is getting at. This is what Paul is getting at with this verse. He says that the ending is already perfectly scripted. It's a Hollywood ending. There is going to be no more death or mourning or crying or shame. That ending is there. And he's saying, you know what, we can pull through this because we know that this Hollywood ending is coming. And I guess the question we have to ask ourselves, what does that mean for us? Does that mean that things will work out here on this earth, that this Hollywood ending is going to be the story of our lives? And you know what? Sometimes it might be. You know, if we look at Lazarus, at what happened there, Jesus came and he raised him back from the dead and he came through in that situation. But there's times we know when maybe he doesn't. He doesn't answer those prayers the way we wish he would have, the way we want him to. And so these guarantees that Paul has aren't for now. They aren't for this life. They are for the eternity to come. And regardless, I think Martha had this understanding. He says, you know what? This is really difficult. This is really hard. But I know that even now, God, you will give whatever you ask. And if we follow that story right a little bit, if we follow this conversation right after, the conversation goes, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, recapping those verses, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection day. And she sees this happy, this fairy tale ending. I know this is going to happen. I still believe in you. I still have faith in you. And then the next part, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? And she replied, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. And I think out of her little bit of the spark of faith and the hope that she had came a greater revelation of who God is. That in the midst of that pain, she was still open to God and to the hope that, you know, God is still there. He's still in control. And Jesus, I think her view of God, of Jesus, grew bigger that day. You know, when Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. And she said, yes, Lord, I believe that you are. And so there's these two responses, Mary and Martha's, and, you know, it is totally understandable, Mary's response, to just be in that place of pain. And sometimes we're in that place of pain. Lord, if you had been here, if you had done this, if you had answered these prayers, I wouldn't be in this mess. But Paul is encouraging us to move beyond that and to have this response that I'm getting mixed up here, that Martha had, that even now, I know you're in control. I know you're there. And are you guys fading on me? It's warm. I want to close with a story. And talking about movies, I don't know if you've seen the movie Unconditional. I think it's based on a true story. It's just recently come out, and it's about the story of a young woman who loses her husband, and she, you know, the movie starts off, and she's kind of at, she's in that sweet spot. She's like, life is going good. And then suddenly her husband is taken away through a mugging and a shooting, and then she's left to deal with this, and the movie talks about kind of how she works through this despair and disappointment and pain. And she's a writer of children's storybooks, and she shares this one story in the middle of this movie. I just want to close with a story, and it's called Firebird. Once upon a time, there lived a little oriole named Firebird. And Firebird just lived for the sunshine. He would bask in that glow for hours. And when the rains would come, he would complain to his mama. He wanted to know why God gave the storms power to take away the sun. And his mama would just smile at him and say, "You'll know someday when you take a walk on the clouds." Now, over and over again, the rains would come, and over again, little Firebird would complain to his mama, until one day a huge storm rolled in, and his mama had a different answer. She said, "It's up there, waiting for you. You just have to see it for yourself." Now, little Firebird was scared. He hadn't used his wings much at all, yet he went up into the great unknown. But instead of answers, he was met with lightning and thunder and a howling wind. He feared it would rip him apart, and he was about to turn back when it happened. He broke through the clouds, and there it was, more beautiful than ever. And in that moment, it all became clear. No storm could take the sun away. The sun was always shining. It was as constant as his mother's love. He just needed to take a walk on the clouds. And so these storms we face, you know, they have the power to cloud out our vision of God and even the sense of presence. And we wonder, are you here, God? But these storms don't have the power to, they haven't taken the sun away. They haven't removed God out of the equation. He's still there. And sometimes we have trouble seeing that, but he is still there. And I think that's what Paul is getting at in this verse. And I'm going to want to read one verse from Ephesians 3, verse 20 and 21. And Paul says here, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever." Amen. So we can hold on to this huge concept of God, and no matter what we're going through. Let's just pray. God, we just praise you and we thank you that you are this huge God. You are far greater and far huger than we could ever imagine, Lord. And we just pray, God, that you'd keep revealing yourself to us. And especially in those times when we are facing difficult things, Lord, that you remind us of who you are, of your faithfulness, Lord. And you remind us, God, that you would remind us of this perfectly scripted ending that is coming one day, God. We just praise you and we thank you. And more than anything, God, we want to, Lord, we look forward to just spending that eternity with you in your presence, God. We just pray this all in your name, Jesus. Amen. Amen.